Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 476 for April 26th, 2014. Coming up in a few minutes.
We used 3 days to record live in the maltings while they were dormant for a short while up at Balvenie. And yeah, exactly as you said, a huge cavernous space with natural reverb and everything else. So we tried to, throughout the recording, you can hear the hum of the distillery in the background.
Sam Simmons, Kat Spencer, Rob Allinson, and Simon Roser aren't giving up their day jobs in the whiskey business, but they've been making music these days, too. Their band Copper Dogs will be performing Friday night at Balvenie Castle during the Spirit of Speyside Festival, and they're releasing a limited edition CD, too. More with Sam Simmons later on Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have this week's Your Voice, the calendar of events, and more, all on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey.
Let's start with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Lots of new whiskies to talk about this week. There were hints earlier this month that Dewar's would be releasing a new Aberfeldy single malt. The new 18-year-old Aberfeldy was confirmed this week. It'll be available in travel retail worldwide and has a new look that will be coming to the 12 and 21-year-old versions available at whiskey specialist shops. Tomatin is shaking up its core range of malts. The current 15 and 30-year-old expressions are being phased out. In their place, a new 14-year-old pork cask finished Tomatin and a 1988 vintage expression. The Glenlivet is adding the first permanent expression to its Nadura line since the original Nadura was introduced in 2006. The Nadura Oloroso cask is said to be the first permanent sherry cask matured Glenlivet on record. It'll start out in travel retail this month at Frankfurt and London airports. Also, Ballantine's is finishing off its signature distillery series with the fourth version of its 17-year-old blend featuring a different distillery. This time around, it's Glentalkers. Previous expressions focused on Scapa, Milton Duff, and Glenburgie. The Balvenie is adding to its single barrel range this week. The 15-year-old sherry cask single barrel Balvenie will gradually replace the current 15-year-old single barrel. And Sam Simmons told me this week a 25-year-old version is in the works.
We'll end up with a 12, a 15, and a 25 from three different types of casks. I was a big fan of the 25-year-old when we had it. I think the last time we made it was in 2003. And a lot of people lament its loss. Mature Balvenie from a single barrel, especially a refill, is gorgeous and sweet and quite luxurious and honeyed. So reintroducing that, giving people what they also seem very keen on is sherry cask Balvenies. Although we don't have many of them in the system of casks, it is a flavor that people really enjoy.
By the way, this would be about the time of year to look for a new Tun 1401 release, but there are changes coming to that range as well. We'll hear more from Sam on that later during Whiskey Cast In Depth. Now, it's taken months longer than planned, but Cavalan's Taiwanese single malts are finally available in the U.S. Seven different Cavalan expressions will be available initially in New York, California, Illinois, Florida, and Texas, but will be available nationwide by the end of the year. The reason for the delay, it's a familiar one. The Treasury Department's Tax and Trade Bureau raised the usual objections to single malt whiskies that aren't made in Scotland, Ireland, or Canada.
Finally, we have got all the TTB approvals, and that's why it took a little while, longer than expected. And I do apologize, to all the consumers in the U.S. who are expecting Cavalan that, it took a while. We are here now.
Cavalan master blender Ian Chang told me the process was also delayed by last fall's federal government shutdown. You can listen to my entire interview with Ian in the news section at whiskeycast.com. No red tape hurdles for Suntory's $16 billion acquisition of Beam. European Commission regulators gave their blessing to the deal this week, and it's scheduled to close this coming Wednesday. Suntory and Beam are both refusing to confirm a Japan news report that Suntory plans to move responsibility for its entire alcoholic beverage division to Beam's headquarters just outside Chicago after the deal closes. Meanwhile, there was one final milestone this week for Beam, as we know it now. They filled the 13 millionth barrel of whiskey since Colonel Jim Beam started distilling in Kentucky as soon as Prohibition ended. That total includes whiskey from the Jim Beam Distillery in Claremont and the Booker No Distillery down the road in Boston. Sazerac is pulling the trigger on another expansion in Bourbon Country, with plans to spend $71 million to expand production and warehousing capacity at Buffalo Trace in Frankfort, the 1792 Barton Distillery in Bardstown, and Glenmore Distillery in Owensboro. The projects will include high-tech inventory management and tracking systems in the bottled goods warehouses at each distillery. Now, it's been about a month since Sullivan's Cove French Oak took the title of World's Best Single Malt in Whiskey Magazine's World Whiskies Awards. At the time, Tasmania Distillery's Patrick McGuire told me his phone was ringing off the hook with distributors wanting whatever he could get his hands on. One of those distributors is Raj Sabarwal of Purple Valley Imports, the U.S. importer for Sullivan's Cove.
We had supply sitting there for 4 months. You know, everyone's going, it's too expensive. And all of a sudden, everybody wants it all. And we were sold out in 2 weeks after he got the award. And not only the French cask, but now the American cask, the double cask, is all gone. And we're waiting for the next shipment to arrive.
When will it arrive?
Probably not till September, but even that, it's all allocated. We're getting a total of 16 cases of French cask for the U.S. for the entire year.
That would fill probably one bar for a year, pretty much, right?
It certainly would, and it's amazing. I mean, individuals calling and looking for a French cask, and there's probably, if there's any around, it's probably in some obscure markets, like maybe in Georgia, maybe in Tennessee somewhere, but, you know, that's all that's sitting around.
Except for what you have in your own personal stash, right?
Well, I made sure I kept one bottle unopened that I'm going to hold on to.
Auction sites are reportedly getting bids of up to $1,200 a bottle for the French Oak. And finally, it only took a few weeks for Reserve 101 in Houston to sell off the bottle of Glenmorangie 1963 that Mike Raymond told us about back in February during episode 466. His bar was selling it for $550 a dram. They drained the bottle on Monday night. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, introducing Glenmorangie Campanter, the fifth release in the Glenmorangie Private Edition range, a complex maturation in both Burgundy and Côte d'Aron French red wine barriques. Find out more at glenmorangie.com.
Congratulations to Tom Helt of Indianapolis, the winner of our ticket giveaway for the Filson Historical Society's Derby Week Bourbon Tasting, coming up on Tuesday night at the 21C Museum Hotel in Louisville. Tom correctly answered our trivia question, where is the Booker No Distillery located? Well, as I said earlier, it's in Boston, Kentucky, about half an hour south of the Jim Beam Distillery in Claremont. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Thought I'd have a little fun this week. I asked folks on Twitter whether I should post tasting notes for the infamous Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Of course, Fireball is intensely trendy these days, but it turns out that opinions were split. I don't normally credit anonymous tweeters, but Lassie Beach from Scotland implied that I should write the review only after the first dozen samples. I don't think so. Matt Wooler tweeted from Australia, "Don't make me come over there and set you straight." And Thomas in Halifax, Nova Scotia, made a very good point. He tweeted this, "My group of friends embrace Fireball, but I don't think there's a need for a review. It serves its purpose, and that's fine." And that is fine, of course. There is a whiskey for every occasion, as one tweeter posted. "Had a cold a few months ago, was made a hot toddy with Fireball whiskey in it, was delicious, and served its purpose." The tweeter, well, it was either Stuart Lang or one of his sons, since it came from the official Hunter Lang & Company Twitter account in Scotland. Can't blame him, though. Better to use Fireball for a hot toddy than to crack open one of those casks of Port Ellen from the warehouse. Now, if you have something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, whether it's a question, a suggestion, or a hot toddy recipe, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at whiskeycast.com, or you can email me directly. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter and Facebook at WhiskeyCast. The comments of the week are brought to you by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. May is shaping up to be a busy month, starting with the Spirit of Speyside Festival in Scotland that gets underway on Thursday and runs through the weekend. The 10th anniversary Spirit of Toronto Festival is this coming Saturday. Portland Whiskey Week also kicks off on Saturday and runs through Whiskey Fest Northwest the following weekend. Dave Broom has three book signings and tastings in New York City on the 10th at the Dead Rabbit, Char No. 4, and the Flatiron Room. The Kentucky Bourbon Affair is May 14th through the 19th in and around Louisville. The Limburg Whiskey Fair is May 17th and 18th in Limburg, Germany. And the month winds up with the Isla Festival of Malt and Music. Fayshiel gets underway May 23rd and runs through May 31st. You'll find a searchable calendar of events at whiskeycast.com, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
Whiskeycast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Liam O'Leary, distiller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
My wife, she has a cousin, a priest, up in Ballyfermot in Dublin. And he comes down every year, especially if Cocker in the All-Ireland final, you know. He makes it his business every year to come down for, by the way, to watch the match. But I know he comes down because he gets a couple of bottles of Redbreast off me every year, you know. And we have a few Redbreasts, and we'd hopefully Cocker will be in the All-Ireland final like they were last year. And he's talking about coming again this year anyway, because I think the priests like their Redbreast anyway, nice and smooth, and you know, not too harsh. It's a lovely smooth whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
Whiskey and music are a natural combination, and we've heard from several musicians over the years on WhiskeyCast who've been inspired by whiskey. This time it's the other way around. Whiskey pros making music for fun. Copper Dogs will perform this Friday night at Balvenie Castle in Dufftown, Scotland, as part of the Spirit of Speyside Festival, and they're releasing a limited edition CD as well. Sam Simmons of the Balvenie is the group's leader of sorts. First of all, tell me who all's in Copper Dogs and how you guys came up with the idea for this.
Well, it started, I started playing music with Cat Spencer, who at the time, I think, was still with Albanac, a whiskey bar and restaurant here in London, and eventually with Master of Malt, and now with a subsidiary of Master of Malt, Maverick Drinks, independent bottler and distributor here in the UK. And so we started playing music together, discovering that she sang and played ukulele. We thought, well, let's get together and just hash out some tunes. At the same time, we were trying to find music for an event for David Stewart's 50th up at the distillery, 50 years with the company. And we struggled to find music, so we settled on someone that's ended up being fine, but we feel we could have done better in retrospect. And a couple months later, there was an opportunity. We needed music again for a launch of our triple cask range for travel retail that we were doing in Cannes. And so I asked Kat if she'd be keen to play, and she said, yeah. I said, okay, well, let's try to assemble some songs. And I spoke to Simon Roser from Simply Whiskey, who was a friend and whiskey brother, and Rob Allenson, editor of Whiskey Magazine at the time. And he played bass, Simon played drums. So we got together and started thinking, hey, can we do something here relevant to the event? So we thought triple cast. We started brainstorming ideas and then ended up with Motown. David Stewart, first of all, is a fan of Motown. We obviously solicited, what sort of music do you enjoy? 1962 was a big year for Motown and a big year for singles. And so single malt sort of played into it. It's the year that he started with the distillery. The other thing we learned was that Motown is the most recognized music around the world. So there's in doing some research that was, I thought, quite interesting. Most recognized popular music, I should say, rather than, you know, classical or other things like that, or TV theme songs. So we started playing. We said, let's play singles, because even when the long play record, the LP, was became a thing, Motown stuck to the singles format. So we thought there was some resonance there with Malt, and then as well with the year, like I said, 1962. So we chose some songs. We played them what we called seaside breezy interpretations of early 60s girl group Motown. And then we were pretty confident we're the only band that played CZ Breeside. So I can't even say it twice, see? And so it began. And then from there, people loved it and invited us to play a few more times after that.
And so you've recorded a CD now, and you decided to do it in the warehouse at Balvenie. And I'm surprised nobody's done this before, because having been in some of the warehouses around Scotland with all the wood and the old stone and everything and the low roofs, those things are natural echo chambers. It'd be great to record in those.
Well, you're right, and it's actually interesting, because most distilleries, the maltings are dormant. So if they still have their maltings sat there as a building, they're empty. And they, like you said, they have beautiful natural ambiance and reverb. We were fortunate at the Balvenie distillery that, you know, we still malt our own barley. But there happened to be a shutdown to update some of the gear. And right at the around the same time, we thought, well, let's get some recordings done. And that's, those two things just happened to happen at the same time. So we had about a week to get everything together, and we used 3 days to record live in the maltings while they were dormant for a short while up at Balvenie. And yeah, exactly as you said, a huge cavernous space with natural reverb and everything else. So we tried to, I mean, throughout the recording, you can hear the hum of the distillery in the background. You hear the ducks outside. You can hear the delivery trucks for some barley coming in. We set up the board upstairs, we set up the gear downstairs, and we just recorded live off the floor 16 tracks over 3 days, and yeah, it was great.
Now, is it true the only reason you guys hired Rob Allinson to work at Grant's is because he could play bass for the band?
Well, whether he could play bass is questionable as well. I mean, I'm not going to let you determine that. It might have something to do with it. He's, I think he, that opportunity came up, and then yeah, he expressed interest without me even knowing, actually. So that, all that was happening in the background as far as I was concerned. So it's exciting news that it happened, though.
I'm being facetious, of course, but, I mean, geez, almost anybody can play bass.
Well, there are bass,
but
there are bass jokes out there, but I think we'll just let it lie. Look at the other side. No bass, no band. You can't think of any ensemble that doesn't have at least somebody playing bass, and then yeah, you're going to cite the Doors, I'm sure. The Doors, no bass. Well, they had a magical left hand.
Well, you know the old joke about how to get the pizza guy, how to get the bass player. I screwed the joke up, but the old joke about how to get the bass player off your porch is to pay him for the pizza.
There you go. Da-da. And I need the drummer to accent the joke as well.
Now, there's no whiskey songs on this.
Well, not by any intention, but we weren't, when we were selecting the songs we were going to play, again, they stemmed out of looking at Motown and looking at early 60s, specifically 1962 when David started with the company. And then from that, what grew was looking into top singles. So some of the biggest singles globally. So not the biggest singles in the US or in the UK, but the biggest singles recognized around the world, because we all know Scotch whiskey means something globally. So we thought we'd try to find tunes that resonated across borders as well, and but then present them in new ways. So then we started blending the songs. We started seeing which ones fixed together. So you'll see from some of the titles that some of the songs we've mixed together, like When Doves Cry and You Keep Me Hanging On becomes You Keep Doves Crying On. So things like that just naturally evolved without specifically choosing not to use spirits or whiskey song, you know, Spirit in the Sky or Whiskey in the Jar. They just never came up. So we chose songs that set a mood for enjoying whiskey.
In other words, you blended them.
A lot of the tunes are blends. You see No Fat Bottom Surprises is on there, so you can guess what songs that's a mix of. And so, yeah, there are some tunes that are blended for sure.
Let's listen to one of them now, and afterwards I want you to sort of explain this.
Well,
Now, there's a bunch of inside jokes in there, and I want you to try to explain them because you've asked some folks in the whiskey industry to take part in this song and take part in this album. So sort of explain how this worked.
Well, again, you know, most songs have a middle eight or a middle section. So in a lot of the tunes, we ended up doing mashups. And when we play My Girl live, we throw any song that comes to our mind out into the microphone. So Kat and I just bounce off each other, and we use the middle eight as a time just for some laughs. And when we were recording the Maltings, we thought we'd choose songs that resonated with where Kat's from, New York, or where I'm from, Canada. So one of the examples is Grade 9, the Bare Naked Ladies, a quintessential Canadian sort of comedy rock band when I was growing up, had a song called Grade 9. And there's a section of the song that we sing in there, but there's also a section of their original where they all cite off their nicknames from high school. So I thought I would invite people like Ian Miller, Charles McLean, Dave Broom, Nick Morgan, Neil Ridley to dial in and leave on my voicemail what they were nicknamed in high school. And they happily obliged. And so we cut them appropriately and put them in the song right after the Grade 9 bit, right before Kat's New York bit.
And Ridley's was the only one I could actually pick up on. The others I was having a little trouble with. But you got Neil, you got Nick Morgan, and some other folks to actually perform with you on this too, right?
Yeah, so they also played. Yeah, Nick Morgan is an excellent guitar player, very tasty licks. So he joined us on a few songs. That had to be in post-production, though. So those takes, unfortunately, weren't live while we were in the Maltings. Because like I said, we needed to rush to get the bed tracks and the singing and everything of the four of us done. And we wanted it live as natural as possible, you know, bruises and all. So there are errors, there's missed up lyrics, you can hear us giggling in parts. And that's what makes it real and natural, you know, using that natural environment to create something bigger than just some of its parts.
So now you're getting ready for the concert and the launch of the CD. First, let's talk about the concert at Balvenie Castle that's coming up May 2nd.
Yeah, so Spirit of Speyside is that weekend, and we had this album finished and mastered, and we're just pressing it now. So we thought, why don't we do an event to launch the record, and looked at doing that at the distillery. Unfortunately, being one of the last distilleries in Scotland that still has an operational floor maltings, we're busy making whiskey, not making music. So we couldn't use the maltings to have the launch because we're malting barley in there, as we should be. We are, after all, a whiskey company. And so we looked into alternatives, and the Balvenie Castle came to mind. So we started pursuing that. And although there were a lot of logistical hoops to jump through, the team at Historic Scotland has been super supportive and actually surprisingly let us host an event. And we think it's the first event of its kind with music inside the castle walls in 400 years. So we're really excited about that.
And that's part of the festival on May 2nd. How can people get the actual CD? Because I know you're only doing, what, 500 copies?
Yeah, these songs aren't originals. So we've covered songs, although we've matched them up, they're not our songs. So we try to keep it quite finite how many copies are available, like a single cask or something. So we decided to assume it was a butt and went for about 500 copies, records only. And then, yeah, we'll stream some of it, like you might link to on the SoundCloud. There's My Girl there. But we'll only make 500 hard copies available, unfortunately.
And that's partially because of royalties too, right?
It's part, exactly, yeah. We want to, I mean, obviously we're respecting the sources, so we've paid for our royalties. And yeah, you haven't heard it yet, Mark, but you might not want to hear it. You don't mind, we might not want wide distribution of this material. I might want to just do it once and let it go. Forget about it as quickly as possible.
So this is the Lock Do of music then, perhaps?
Oh, well, yeah, it would certainly, it could polarize people.
I'm
or
kidding,
Octomore.
I'm kidding. It sounds like you guys had a lot of fun with this, though.
That's what, I mean, primarily that was it about. When you go to a whiskey event and there is background music or there's a tasting or there's a host, these are the things that are memorable, whether you consciously remember them or not, and they set the environment. So we were really conscious when we started playing of just setting music that spoke to people on different levels, just in the background while they were enjoying a dram or two at a whiskey event, not just Balvenie. We did a few other events as well. And then as this has grown, we, you know, made this recording, and we hope that, yeah, people do throw it on, pour themselves a dram and enjoy it.
What else is going on at the Balvenie that we need to know about? It sounds like it's about time for another 10-1401 release.
Yeah, so there is whiskey maturing in 10-1401, but I think to date there's no plan to liberate it. I think that those casks will probably sit there indefinitely. As you know, for 1401, one challenge or part of the fun for a lot of whiskey enthusiasts was finding the different batches, because they weren't all available in every market. Some were only for travel retail, some were only for the US, some were only for Europe or Asia. And that was a challenge. I mean, it was the easiest way to distribute with some weight, so that at least you could, if you wanted to, get it in the US, to send them all to just the US rather than thinly spreading out across the whole world. There was a solution to that limited nature of it. You know, a ton can only hold 2,000 liters of spirit maximum. So you're only going to get just over 2,000 bottles out of it. So what we are currently doing is building a bigger ton that can hold upwards of 8,000 liters, so that hopefully we can have enough per batch to meet a global demand for 10-1401. And so that's the plan, is to in the future have another ton with the same whiskeys, you know, very mature spirit, no younger than 22 years old, and most of it from the 60s and 70s, vatted in a ton of a different number, I guess, because we'll have to renumber it.
Or 1401B.
I'm sorry?
Or B. Yeah, 1401B.
You could do, but that gets confusing too, because a lot of people refer to 1401 as 1401B1, 1401B2. So that's one thing we threw around, but we haven't yet decided on a number, but you know, on April Fool's, we jokingly said it was 2112, thanks to Rush, or, you know, 5150 from Van Halen. So I'm open to suggestions.
Now, but if I remember right, the last one came out back in November. It was Batch 9 for the U.S., and given the release schedule, April is about the time that we should see one for the U.K., if I remember right.
You're right, but so they're, like I said, currently there's no bottling plan for the 10th batch. Although David's made it, it's in the tun right now. You can visit it at the distillery. Probably if you're lucky, David will let you stick your finger in the top of the tun and have a wee taste. But currently there's no plan to bottle it, and probably the next tun that we'll see bottled will be the new tun.
Okay, so this one's gonna so the last of the original 10-1401s was batch number 9.
That's how it currently seems. I can't say for certain because we don't yet have a plan for the spirit that's in that in the tun right now, marrying. So it's really David Stewart's call at the end of the day, but right now there's no bottling plan for it.
As Sam told us earlier, the Balvenie's new 15-year-old sherry cask single barrel will be released on Friday as well to mark the release of the Copper Dogs CD. Okay, it's probably the other way around. By the way, I've posted a link for the entire version of My Girl by Copper Dogs on SoundCloud at WhiskeyCast.com. And that's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with a Speyside single malt in honor of the Spirit of Speyside Festival coming up this week. This one is from Blackadder. It's the Blair Findy 23-year-old, distilled back in the spring of 1988, and bottled at 48% ABV. I know what you're thinking. Blair Findy? Yeah, it's from one of those distilleries that can't be named without a lawsuit, but Blair Findy is the original name of the farm where the distillery is located. That'll give you something to Google. The nose is fruity with notes of peaches, apples, plums, figs, and touches of ginger and oak.
The taste has a good cinnamon spice, tart citrusy notes of grapefruit and orange peel, hints of peaches underneath, and touches of ginger and apricots. The finish is dry, sweet, tart, and lingering. I'm scoring the Blackadder Blairfindi 23-year-old single malt a 92. I mentioned the Kubakin 1989 vintage from Tomaten a couple of weeks ago and received a sample this past week. It's a bourbon cask matured malt that was produced when the distillery accidentally used a batch of peated malt back in June of 1989. It's bottled at 53.2% ABV, and the nose has a good smokiness with peat and burning heather, hints of tropical fruits, pears, and coconut, with touches of vanilla and honey that come out over time. The taste is smoky and fruity with a good peatiness, fresh berries and hints of citrus fruits, balanced by clove, ginger, and coconut notes. The finish is smooth and sweet with honey, berries, and a good smoky touch. I'm scoring Tomaten's Kubakin 1989 vintage a 92. Enoch has also experimented with peat in recent years. I mentioned its new series of peated malts from Knock Dew Distillery several weeks ago, and received samples of those via the Whiskey Ferry as well. There are three whiskeys in this series. I'll share just one of them with you here. Enoch Flotter is named for the tool that peat cutters use to remove the top layers of peat from a bog. It's peated at 14.8 parts per million of phenols, bottled at 46% ABV. The nose is fruity and sweet with a subtle peatiness, along with red grapes, orange peel, pineapple, and coconut notes, balanced by ginger and nutmeg. The taste is fruity at first with apples and orange peel, then spice and peat come in with a burst of cinnamon and heathery peat that fade to show ginger and coconut notes with just a hint of butterscotch. The finish is dry with a sweet tangy smoke and a hint of honey that lingers on the tongue. I'm scoring Enoch Flotter a 92. I've added these tasting notes to the searchable list of nearly 1,200 different whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news and the calendar of events, my photo gallery and print shop where you can get free shipping on all orders between now and Father's Day in June, and a complete archive of past episodes. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey.
Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2014, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.